Unity, the strength and the sure success.
My plea for a little bit of unity. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room there if you dare. And also check out GorillaMedia.co.nz with the fabulous articles we have talking about stuff that no New Zealand news source would really want to print. And I don't know. We're just waiting for the first, defamation suit or something like that. It'll be fabulous. Now, speaking of defamation suits, Anzac Day. It is a day where we commemorate the dead who have fallen in battle in the service of freedom. Well, so we're told. Now, my take is a little bit different from that. I think it's when good, upstanding young people who want to serve their country and better their nation died mercilessly at the hands of murderers who orchestrated the entire thing and profited massively off it. So it's not a day of remembrance for me. It's a day of anger at the betrayal to see my country go to the hand of international bankers. And to see my countrymen having died for it, died for a lie, and had their country sold out behind them when they left and stepped onto those ships. Yeah. That's the day of remembrance that I think we all better pay attention to. Because it is still a time when people are dying because of this lie. That our governments truly represent us. That money is real, that all these massive mega corporations aren't connected and all hang out at the same clubs and all practice really evil stuff. It's pretty straightforward. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And if you're the richest people in the world and you had all the money you needed, another mega yacht or another Learjet, it wouldn't make any difference to you. What do you want? You want power. You want power over everything. The only way you can amass that much power with that little truth is you have to be a dang good fraudster. And that's what we got. Bunch of fraudsters that need a dash of truth. And the Tree of Liberty has to be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. I think it was Thomas Jefferson that said that. Who also, incidentally, I'm told in a movie called Swordfish, shot a man on the White House lawn for treason. And I say, well, that's justice for you. It may not be pretty, but it's swift. And you get it over and done with. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back.
We can be more than ever people, more than ever people.
Gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, coming at you live from the fabulous fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, in the slave South Pacific. Speaking of going south, our very special guests, plural for a reason, Stuart and Jackie Swerdlow. If you have not heard of these people, I'm going to allow them to introduce themselves. But by all accounts, some of the most fabulous people in the Patriot movement known globally. And I'd like to welcome them, my very esteemed honour and various other nice adjectives. Stuart and Jackie Swerdlow, welcome, guys.
Hi, thank you. And it's Janet Swerdlow that's with me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. That's my twin sister, I guess.
Well, I guess that's part of the confusion. Now, you were part of the Montauk Project, Stuart. What is that?
Yes, the Montauk Project was from 1970 to 1983, and it was an outgrowth of the Cold War in the United States and the Soviet Union. And they figured out that the best way to control people is with programming and mind control, where a small group of people can control the billions on the planet. So that's a very short synopsis of what Montauk was about, but it also included genetic manipulation, esoteric weaponry, time travel, interdimensional experiments, and that kind of thing.
All the stuff that conspiracy theories are made of, etc., you actually witnessed.
Yes, I was there for all of that. It was basically a one-stop shop for everything paranormal that you can think of.
Yep. And, Jenna?
Yes?
What about you, love?
Well, I've been involved in metaphysics all of my life. I was consciously aware of my oversoul and my inner connections since I was born, and I was very fortunate to have been raised by parents who fostered that within me and did not shut it down. And they also had their own strange, we'll say, experiences. And of course, as you know, programming is genetic. And so, of course, I had many programming experiences similar to Stuart growing up as well. And on top of that, I have interesting lineage because I am also of Waldensian lineage, which is traced back to the Magdalene lineage in southern France and so forth. So, I also have interesting genetics, which, of course, are very useful to the Illuminati for the things that they want to take advantage of. And then one more set of genetics, I have American Indian in me as well. So a mix in there, kind of a Heinz 57.
Like a mixed goodie bag, the both of you.
There you go. Between the two of us, you've got just about everything.
I like that term, goodie bag.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I'm appearing a bit simple here, but I feel that the war against the Illuminati is just the goodies versus the baddies, like we were doing with kids, you know, shooting with toy guns and whatnot. And it's just basically like that. But it's been blown up, and now the imaginary war where everything you never thought possible is now real, and you have to deal with it.
Absolutely true. And, you know, every day when you look at the news, there are things on there that you never would have imagined even 5 or 10 years ago. And certainly when I was growing up, these things were in the realm of fantasy, and here they are on everyday news. And I think the most amazing things are yet to come.
Oh, yeah. That Star Trek Borg future we all know and love.
Absolutely. And as you may know, the Illuminati are attempting to create the human beings into a Borg society.
Yeah, I remember the Matrix. And there was a document declassified in 2002 or something. I forget when. But the Matrix and the hive system and putting people into a tank and like programming their minds and all of that kind of stuff, that was actually in a document that they dreamed up.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Well, that's how they come up with the movie ideas and the television shows and everything else that's out there. They really do exist, and that's the way they introduce these concepts to people. And oftentimes they don't understand that, but they are being imprinted so that when these things do happen, it's not so strange, and the general population is controlled because they don't go wild over or fearful, or they're used to it.
Well, when people are getting imprinted, I mean, I was talking with a friend yesterday about the new types of televisions they've got. They now have 3D televisions and all of these other different types of things. And they're completely mesmerizing by comparison to traditional television, which incidentally has a flicker rate so high that you can't stay in an analytical conscious alpha brainwave state. You actually slip into a sort of subconscious beta waves, which is more suggestible and emotional side of your brain rather than the mathematical side. And basically, you start to get imprinted with these sorts of images and ideas and things of that nature where people don't even understand how it's affecting them because they're not ingesting it during a subconscious state, which is, what do we only use? A couple of percent of our brain? The rest is sort of subconscious?
Yeah, that's true.
We only use 10% or less of the brain.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd probably say it probably is about 2% in some areas of our countries, wouldn't you say?
Definitely.
You know, the fluoride's doing a grand job, is it not? It's just when we talk about the environment and how it affects us, affects our minds, affects our bodies and our spirits and our souls, etc., I wonder how much it has an effect on just general people around us, behavior. And one of the subjects I wanted to bring up with you two today was about patriot infighting and personal attacks. And I've been made aware that you guys have experienced some very particularly nasty things. And I wanted to question sort of to what extent does all the different mind control techniques that are employed simultaneously, to what extent does that dictate people's behavior in that respect?
Well, that's a very good question. And, you know, it depends on the mind patterns of the people involved. But quite frankly, at this stage of the Illuminati game, they're in a position where they're very much afraid of information being given out to the public, especially information that's avant-garde at the moment and could change everything for them. Because basically they know that their days are numbered because there's a lot of things going on that they never planned on. And so they have their own little army of programmed robots out there, people who, let's say, have been diverted in their life through drug addiction, illness, abuse, all kinds of methodologies that would give them low self-worth issues, have issues with authority figures, etc. And so they can easily activate those people to attack in many different ways, those who are telling them information that's true or accurate, or who may remind them of their parental figures or authority figures. And so that is basically what we're seeing. And I've spoken to a lot of people in my field of work, and all of us are approximately in the same age range, and every single one has had some sort of attack. Whether it's on internet, telephone, personal, all the above, mail, email, it just goes on and on in a very vicious and horrible manner, without any respect whatsoever for the people whom they are attacking.
Which is kind of like the cartoon characters, you know, or the villains and all of that kind of stuff. You know, it's such the same thing. Sorry, Jenna, what were you saying?
I was just going to say, it's just interesting to me to watch what's happening, because if you're reading my article on the site about the crucifixion imprinting, of course, we're coming up here to the Christian holiday soon that so many people celebrate. Or if you don't celebrate it, at least you see the Christ figure nailed to the cross. And so I have talked a lot about how that you are imprinted, whether you are a Christian or not, to crucify your leaders, that those people who come to save you, that you crucify them. And so that is within the mind pattern of the masses. And when someone steps out of and shows that they are a leader, then the masses are programmed to attack that person and bring them back into the fold. And so there really is no need for the Illuminati to have any high-tech thing out there to bring you down, because your own peers will do that. And they do. And they will come out from under all the rocks, and people that you have would never suspect do such things. They come out because they are activated and they don't know what they're doing. Honestly, they do not have control of their mind, such as you're talking about earlier. And they have less than 10%, much less than 10% that they're in control of. And therefore, they become the puppets. And then people such as myself and my husband and other people who are doing our best to be way showers out there and give people some direction, we become automatic targets, because that is their imprinting. Crucify your leaders.
Well, it seems like the inlay of a madhouse in 50s psychiatry, where they would try to get people to act in particular nice, upstanding ways by beating them or injecting them with dangerous drugs or electrocuting them. Or, you know, it's insane way to try and force a nice result out of somebody. And as a result, we've got now a society that is affected almost on every single conceivable level, in every single way, in every single day, influenced by some form of brainwashing or mind manipulation. It doesn't matter whether it's the EMF frequencies coming out of the electrical sockets. It doesn't matter if it's the television feeding you propaganda from CNN. It doesn't matter. You're always under this type of influence, and it's sort of like cause and effect to me, because if everybody's under some sort of mind control, and the people who've developed this or rather benefit from this result, I don't think they'd have very nice intentions if they had power over everybody, because, hey, that's like practically absolute power. And nobody doesn't get corrupt if they get their hands on absolute power, apparently.
Well, you know, one of the things that Stuart and I teach is we teach about frequency and to understand the frequency that is within each person. And when you understand your own frequency, which most people do not, then you can understand and you feel and you recognize the outside influence and you can protect yourself from it. But most people do not get that. But the Illuminati, obviously, they do understand frequency. If you go to alcohol, you know, at one time alcohol was a food, and people used it as a food, and it has good digestive enzymes in it, and it serves a purpose. But the alcohol that's out there today is imprinted with frequency to addict people. And that's just, of course, a one thing. But they use frequency, you know, like you would drink a glass of water. They understand what it is and how to use it against people. Or, as you're talking about, to rope them in and empower themselves and supposedly disempower the masses. And it's very important that people start to understand what they are so that they are not affected. And this is what's going to get them out of this mass mind control.
Mass mind control. Imagine the evil scumbag engaging in untold levels of scumbaggery would do with the power of mass mind control. You know, even I'm just thinking about it now. That'd be very interesting. All of a sudden get everybody really, I don't know, up in arms and get very upset at why their government isn't doing what they're supposed to be doing, why everybody's corrupt, why the entire system inexorably forces us to work harder for less pay and for longer hours. It's the rent prices are going up, fuel prices, everything. What point is going to be reached here when everybody has basically just had enough? Or are they just easily mind-controlled enough that instead of rising up, they would rather spend their life in a tent town trying to eke a living out of rocks and sand. You know, that doesn't sound like a future that I want to see or live in. But what would possess somebody to do nothing in the face of absolute poverty?
Well, that is a very good point. And I have been saying recently that what the Illuminati have not taken into account is that when you push humanity to the point where there is nowhere else to go, then something from within the human mind will override whatever programming is there, and people will fight back. Now, what we're seeing happening in North Africa and the Middle East is not that, because that is all staged for public consumption in order to change those governments into more along the lines of the New World Order theme. So we can't use that as an example. But I do see that there are people here in North America and Europe and other places who feel so desperate and have nowhere else to go that despite the mind control, their desperation is overriding whatever functions are programmed into them. And they're starting to say, hey, we have to do something about it because I don't like the prospects that are coming up.
It's about taking responsibility, isn't it, really? What's eroded all our responsibility? Is it because everything's so easy, you know? Like, we had it so easy for so long that we don't know how hard things really used to be, and we don't have that kind of work ethic, our morality's been broken down, people don't even talk to each other anymore, you know? They're texting each other like crazy, but, you know, phone call, oh, man, I'm going to ignore that one. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, my remarkably special, fabulous, and various other nice adjectives guests are Janet and Stuart Swerdlow of Expansion. And we'll be right back after the break at the Vinny Eastwood Show.com.
I got some so called friends, smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on?
That's right, baby. Whose side are you on? Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's alternative media. My remarkably special guests are Janet and Stuart Swerdlow. Guys, welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes. One thing we wanted to talk about was personal attacks. Now, if in your experience, What's the worst kind of thing that you've had to deal with? I mean, we want to get really really deep on this now. What's the hardest thing that you've had to deal with in terms of attacks on you?
Well, I guess the worst thing of all was when they started to attack my children, you know, because they know that I may not care what they say about me. But when they say things about my children or threaten them, then that's when they cross a very big line. And so I think that is the worst part of the whole thing. Recently I had a conversation with David Icke, and he said to me that this is what is supposed to happen now, because it is end times programming. And during the end times programming, people are supposed to show who and what they really are. Their true selves come out, and then you can see that the ones that you thought were your friends really are not, and that you need to look within yourself and see what you're reflecting out.
Yeah. That reminds me of when I spent some time in Dunedin, pretty much the coldest city in New Zealand, where I had my olive oil freeze at room temperature.
Sorry.
Yeah. $190 a week for a three-bedroom house, though, is not too bad. And what was really disturbing about it is that I got arrested, and I was dealing cannabis when I was young, and I got arrested, and I had all these people who I thought were my friends, you know, coming by and hanging out and all of that kind of stuff and buying weed off me. And as soon as I got arrested, I didn't see a single one of those people ever again. It was absolutely incredible. It was like my entire world had been built up on a social premise, and it was all a lie. And as soon as what motivated them to stick with me went away, they disappeared. So it was nothing to do with me. That's the problem that we have with our relationships in a certain sense, is that you think that you're actually building a relationship with somebody when they're just using you for something.
Well, that's an interesting point, and I like the way that you phrase that, because that's absolutely what we have found out, and we have been through this in several phases. It seems like we build up these relationships, as you say, and we think that they are something, only to find out that they're not, and they were built on falsehoods. It is amazing, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
The people that sometimes are the closest to you as far as friends are concerned, sometimes even family, those are the ones who turn on you the most.
Well, I think it's statistically speaking, in terms of murders, crimes of that kind of extreme nature, you're far more likely to be killed by somebody you love than by somebody you don't know.
Yes, I guess they love you to death.
Yeah. Or well, can you really be loved to death? Because I can't think of a loving way to stab somebody 217 times.
No, that's true. But you know, people are sometimes a bit deranged, and quite honestly, I think most people don't know what love is.
Well, what does love mean for you? I mean, how long have you guys been together?
Oh, how long have we been together? About
16 years, I think.
16 or 17, maybe.
I think you don't remember too quickly because you feel like you've been together. Because you feel like you've been together your whole lives, yeah?
Well, we have, to be honest. That's good perception. We've been together forever.
But, you know, we were both with other people before we met, and so it's like we had another lifetime, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's just the thing. How do you maintain your composure amid all these attacks? And how does that affect your relationship with each other?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, I think it brings us closer together. Even though there's a lot of stress, when it sounds kind of cliche, but when there's nobody else, you know, there's not only yourself, but we have each other. And so all these people that we thought were our support systems, as they have dropped off one by one, it has left us more intensely in touch with each other because we are our support systems. And that's part of the love that we have for each other. It is unconditional, and neither one of us are perfect. And we've both been through our own personal hells. And sometimes that does affect life and the way we perceive each other. But underneath, there is that feeling always, that knowing that we love each other. And most people, I don't think, get that.
It also reminds me of that Anne Murray song from a few years ago where it goes, you and me against the world. And that's kind of what it feels like when these things happen. And it's like, okay, now we have to pull in to our borders and put our boundaries up and have very strict security around us. And that's what we have to do.
I choose to, in those sorts of situations, instead of retreat in, I reach out. And I find that just by talking about it with many, many different people, I'll find out a good solution or some help can come of it. And I've noticed this. I've had a few crises with my car recently, and within 48 hours, a $1,000 problem was going to be fixed for free, and three people gave me beer to help me deal with the pain of not being able to drive.
Yeah, with the beer, it's a good thing you weren't driving when you had the beer.
I know, that's the only reason why I ordered beer.
Well. And, you know, and that's interesting because, you know, a lot of people, when they have situations that are difficult, they sometimes use things that help them deal with it. And that's okay as long as it doesn't get out of hand. But, you know, when I say go within, what I'm talking about is look at the mind pattern that attracted the situation. Look at what are you thinking and feeling that you projected out into the world that then reflected back. That's where I have to go inside and look at myself and realize, as difficult as it may be, that all of these people that have done these things or are planning these things, somehow or another, they're reflecting some part of me that maybe self-sabotages, self-punishes, that kind of a thing. And so I looked at that, and I had to work on that.
My my producer one time had some problems with toxic people, and he says, "Vinny, why? Why, Vinny, are all these toxic people attracted to me?" And I say, "Well, Mitch, it's because you're a very nice person, all right? Toxic people need love too."
Well, a lot of times people who are toxic, you know, they have a lot of issues. And so when we look at that as well, for instance, because Stuart and I are who we are and in the position that we're in, so let's say they have issues with their parents. And so if somebody has an issue with their father and they can't work it out, well, it's real easy to send a hate email to Stuart because Stuart then becomes like the surrogate father for them. Or the same thing with myself. Maybe they have mother issues. And so rather than talk to their mother and they can't say certain things, so then something comes my way. And so when you take a look at the people who are doing these things, most of them, it's really very sad. And, you know, you wish you could deal with them in other ways, but they really have closed themselves off and they're really not open to anything except to try and hit and poke and do what they can. And usually, of course, they're anonymous. While we are out there with our names and people know who we are and what we do, you know, they hide under a rock and poke you with a stick and then go back under the rock again. So in a way, it's almost comical.
Yeah, well, it does sound like that. Like I'm some sort of woodland fairy tale, you know, like, "Hada! I'm going to come out and I'm going to scare you with a singular email or phone call." Yes. And yes. I'm not going to tell you my name because I don't have the cojones.
Well, they have strange names. I won't tell them on the air, but I mean, you would not believe. I mean, Purple Pebble and people like that. Who knows?
Well, you know, the names that they choose are actually, they're describing themselves.
Yeah.
So well, very interesting.
What would one mean when they're describing themselves as a purple pebble, I wonder? A very confused individual, I might think.
Well, and you should see what that person says.
That's just the beginning. I mean, there are just so many different names and monikers and icons that they use that really are hiding behind. And most of them use, of course, the cartoonish type of icon. And what is that? That's programming. Ooh. You know, they're very, very strange people with very strange ideas because they're preaching peace, but yet what they're dishing out is just quite the opposite. And for some odd reason, they don't see that.
They're very angry people. I mean, when I look at the things that they write, I think only a really hurt, angry person can do that. And it's something that happened long time ago in their childhood from people that they love that hurt them very badly. And now they're lashing out against everybody who even remotely reminds them of that person.
Yeah, yeah. It's like you carry a chip on your shoulder for a while, you know, and it just eats into you. And for some reason, instead of thinking, "Man, I'm really actually angry at that other person and I never stood up to them, so instead of doing that, I'm just going to hurt this person over here." And that happens all the time. Everybody's got a beef with everybody else just because they've got a beef with themselves, and it's how they interact. You know?
Absolutely. I agree with you. And it's just, you know, it's amazing that I guess that they're reaching out in their own way the best that they can. But for some reason, they always fail to see that what they're doing is equally as hurtful as what's been done to them. You know, they have the power in their mind, even if they're hidden behind a anonymous moniker, anonymous name. You know, there is no real being used as an instrument of the Illuminati to hit an attack because they're no longer even taking care of themselves. and which is ultimately why each person is here. We're here to learn about ourselves, and instead they're being distracted from what they need to do, and they seem to be just okay with that.
Is that possibly a side effect of our lack of self-sufficiency? Like, we don't connect to the land, we don't connect with each other, our communities are sort of broken up, and so therefore we've got these crutches that we lean on, which is other people. They don't deserve it.
Well, you know, I think disconnection is a really good word right there, because like you said, people aren't eating real food and, you know, they don't feel like they have a place or a purpose. People are striving to find that. I think ultimately everybody wants to be needed. Everybody wants to be loved. Everybody wants people and support and a relationship, and they want, you know, what the dream is, but they don't know how to attain it. I think that there's a lot of confusion that people have bought into. And for that reason, they don't know who they are, and therefore they don't know who you are. And then they just poke and prod. They're very upset and confused population out there right now.
Well, this is a point in a conversation that you're having, like an argument with somebody, and they say, you're just doing this because you're making money off of it. And so instead of describing how they feel, right, they're describing what they think you feel.
Right, and, that's true.
And in response, you just say, well, you're just a completely crazy person, and I don't even want to care about what you say. So you're describing how you feel back, but they're not listening. And I think it's when you have a conversation where it's, I explain how I feel, and then you listen to me, and then you explain how you feel, and I listen to you. That way, you stop things like wars, conflict, and real kind of problems going on here. And if it's unacceptable, you just keep explaining how you feel, and eventually you realize that you shouldn't have felt so bad in the first place. You know, everything just gets worked up in your mind to a certain perspective, and you can just drop the feeling of something in an instant via any description of realization.
Well, that's true. And unfortunately, though, a lot of people don't react in that way. You know, for example, one of the people with whom we've had issues in the past, we've spoken to him in person in our home several times and explained how he felt. And he kind of just listened, never said a word anyway, because he's not non-communicative in person. And then he went back and started doing things all over again, just as if we never spoke to him. So sometimes you kind of waste your energy in trying to talk to someone and try to get an understanding, because they're just not interested in that understanding.
Indeed. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Show of American Freedom Radio, broadcasting live from the future. It's already Good Friday in New Zealand. And I was talking about the Anzac Day celebrations, where we commemorate the dead soldiers who went off to fight in Gallipoli and gave their lives in the service of freedom. But in actual fact, they were deceived by a bunch of corrupt thugs who made an enormous amount of money off of their deaths and caused an enormous amount of loss, suffering to an entire generation. And that's what we want to remember today. Not that they died in the service of freedom. It's a lie. And they don't deserve to be lied about. They deserve the truth to be told. And that's what I like to do on my show, and get some fabulous guests on, like Janet and Stuart Swerdlow. Welcome back from break, guys.
Hello.
Thank you.
Yes. So, where do we have it from here? What is the most crazy thing that you have ever seen? Oh, wait, no, actually, scratch that. The reptilian conspiracy. Now, there is, and I want to give a shout out to David Icke here as well, because I've managed to send off some information to his organizing dude who's helping him with his tour here in New Zealand. And he's coming to New Zealand in November, and I can't freaking wait. And you've known David Icke for some time, and you're both into the reptilian conspiracy. And what I find is that whenever that word gets mentioned, and this is the automatic response, and of course you know this all too well, is that people instantly retract and just banish you from their existence. You know, it's just like, oh, it's crazy, it's absolutely out of their mind. When in actual fact, if you believe in the Bible, there's probably just about as much evidence for the Bible in the old scriptures and ruins and whatever as there is for reptilians.
No, that's very true. That's a very good point. You know, there's absolutely no proof of anything that's written in the, and especially the Old Testament. And so people believe that sooner than they believe something in front of their face.
It's incredible. And this goes to the thing, why everybody maybe is sort of on edge or tense. It's that you can't see the light of the tunnel at the end of the tunnel if you've got your blinders on. People are just blocking things out, and they don't see the world at all. It's almost like they're just blindly walking around, bumping into things. There's no direction. They're like a rudderless craft or a jellyfish that just floats on the ocean currents. There's no direction for them. And so they get all confused and angry and upset, and they start lashing out at other people. And if you are the person who's just unwittingly on the end of this random stick from under a rock, as you put it, how is it that they think they can justify this in their mind? They'd have to be insane, right? And I think that if we're dealing with a society that produces people who are just insane and kind of dangerous and very upsetting at the very least, then maybe the whole of society at some fundamental level has something inherently wrong with it.
Well, there absolutely is something wrong with our society. That's a tremendous statement. You know, we are a society that is completely blind to what's going on around them. And there are factors, and we mentioned earlier the mind control and programming. That's a major factor. But another one is that there's so much fear and anxiety within people that they just don't want to look to see what's going on out there because they're afraid to know what the truth may be. And so they retreat into the news from Fox and CNN that just tell them what they're supposed to believe, and then that's easier than thinking for themselves or doing their own research.
The other thing that I have found, which is also interesting to me, and I say this almost every chance I get, is that, you know, people are afraid of the dark side of themselves. That seems like a given. But what people don't stop and recognize is how much they are afraid of the light side of themselves and their own personal power. And when you are handing them their power and wonderful things on a platter, believe it or not, a large percentage of people will throw that in your face. People are more comfortable, even if it is a status quo of doubt and confusion, because that's the known. And you start putting people into the unknown, positive or negative, and you have a lot of fear out there. So as we talked about earlier, it's really a challenge for people to do something with their lives these days. There's a reason why there's a lot of stagnation in society, and a lot of that is just internal self-fed fear.
Well, and it's and I don't think that fear is manifested particularly by us. I mean, it's certainly been helped along.
Well, you know, I think that humanity as a species has a victimization mentality, and so they attract these oppressors and tyrants and people that force domination upon them. And so I think we have to each individually and collectively release that from our mind patterns so that the powers that be no longer have that to control over us.
Well, it's like that part of the brain, I believe, is like the appendix. We don't need it anymore. and I think that, you know, we're going to get rid of it someday, and it'll just be there, just like a benign little growth, and we won't need to be mean or cruel or upsetting or disastrous anymore. My very special guests are Janet and Stuart Swerdlow from expansions.com. And it's been quite a rip-roaring little emotional and traumatic ride, this whole life thing. But hey, at least you can laugh about it. At least you can enjoy it. And at least you still got each other, because everybody needs somebody to love. We'll be right back after the break. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. Check out our fabulous articles from activists and news journo ex-people who've been kicked out of their news organizations for telling the truth alike. And it's a funny thing. When you are the persecuted minority, it actually feels quite awesome because it means that you're special. And the interesting part is, you've been special the whole time, and it was only once you got started to get persecuted that you realized it. My very special guests are Janet and Stuart Swerdlow. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Mm-mm-mm. Now, time travel. Tell me a little bit about this. What have you known?
Well, the one good thing about it is you don't need a passport or a ticket. And so, you know, in Montauk Project, you know, they developed that technology from what they were given or they took from alien technology over the years. And basically what they learned was that time and space are an illusion, and that physical reality really is just a heavier vibration of the non-physical. And so every point in time and space has a unique set of frequencies or vibrations. And there are no two alike anywhere in creation. So if you know the exact frequency vibration of a specific point in time and space, and then you match whatever person, place, or thing you want to connect to that spot, and you vibrate the person, place, or thing at that vibration, there's an instant connection. And so time travel can take place instantaneously. And that is also how deep space travel is accomplished by going from point A to B. You just dial in the vibration of point B. You send that vibration to the object you want to send, and instantaneously it's there.
Very interesting. It sounds like on Time Cop, where the same matter can't occupy the same space, the same vibration must occupy the same space.
Right.
Very interesting. Now, speaking of alien technology and all of that, why exactly would aliens give us technology? What plans do they have for us? Do they want us to create something to destroy ourselves, or have they got some kind of a plan? I don't know. But the commenting about aliens of late seems to be a very, very common occurrence. We have all these aliens are going to come down and destroy us movies like Battle Los Angeles and Skyline, and the UN's just appointed their first alien representative. It's an astrophysicist chick from Malaysia, apparently. So when the aliens come down and say, show us to your leaders in their Project Blue Beam holographic ships... They'll say, oh, it's this little chick from Malaysia. She represents the whole of Earth through the UN. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio, and we'll be right back.
Some kind of way out of here. Said I jump into the thief.
And we're back. There's so much confusion. Oh, but there's plenty of relief. Comic relief, preferably, because it's difficult to get depressed when every sentence is followed by ah! You know what I'm saying? And my very special guests, Janet and Stuart Swerdlow, coming at us live. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you. It's good to still be live.
Yeah. It's still good to be alive, you know. I appreciate every moment of it. Well, considering there's only one moment, this one, and that moment just keeps continuing on. It doesn't stop, and it never has.
That's right.
So what are you going to do about it? You know, that's what people really need to be asking themselves this time in their life. Hey, this moment in time, what are you going to do about it? Time doesn't wait for you, so why should you wait for it? You know, I see lots of people sitting around waiting for things to happen. And, you know, it's interesting. I was noticing on television how a lot of these new television series, which are like, I don't know, vampire-based or supernatural-based or something along those lines, they all involve characters who just one day just got plucked, plum, and got given all these gifts. And I was wondering, to what extent that's actually influenced people to think that everything that they want is just going to someday come knocking on their door?
Well, you know, I see that a lot with people these days, where they, especially, I'd say, males who are between, let's say, early 20s to late 30s, especially here in North America, they just have no motivation to do anything and expect everything to be given to them.
Is that like kind of because I don't know what it is. Is it because our society is too convenient at the moment? You know, you don't actually have to cook a meal for yourself or your family. You don't have to grow the vegetables. Or, you know, you don't have a sense of anything that you have to really earn in order to experience. You know, it's sort of like the old brown hen story. You know, keeps going around going, ah, buck, 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 buck. Somebody help me make some bread, and nobody else wants to help her make the bread. And as soon as she's made it all herself, everybody wants a slice, and she says, nah. You didn't do anything to help. You don't deserve anything.
Well, you know, ultimately, I think the government wants everybody dependent upon them because that's how they're taking people's families apart. They're taking their sense of self-identity apart. People can't earn a good living, you know. So they're putting all this doom, gloom, and despair. And so eventually, like you're even talking about the food, you know, they'll go to the government for food. They'll go to the government for housing, for clothing, and so forth. It's leading people outside of themselves and away from their sense that I can do it. People don't know how to cook on my podcast that we're doing. That's one of the most popular things. I'm just showing people simple things, you know, how to boil eggs, how to devil eggs, you know, how to do some very simple things for yourself. It's quick, it's easy, it's nutritious. Not that is not taught. My son took a cooking class at his public high school, and they showed him how to bake using a can of Pillsbury dough muffins. You know, there is no sense of where things come from. There's no interconnectedness. All of that is being taken away through the illusion that you are powerless and that you are alone and that you're isolated and you're worthless and so forth. So who are you going to turn to? Well, the government is out there in all countries. That's the global government that's really coming into place and into power, because people are handing their personal power over. People forget that, like you said, that they have to have a hand in making that bread happen. They're just not going to go pluck it off a shelf.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and again, today, in modern supermarkets, you can just go pluck it off the shelf. That's right. You can go down to your supermarket right now, it's a 24-hour one, and you can pluck a loaf of bread that has bleached flour in it, that's been sprayed with herbicides and pesticides, and you can make a sandwich with artificial butter that has absolutely nothing nutritious about it whatsoever, even flies won't touch it, and you can put onto that some lettuce that's been sprayed with more herbicides and pesticides. You can see where I'm going with this. It's a layer of poison upon poison upon poison upon poison upon poison wrapped in convenience.
That's right. And if you go to the supermarket, I call it plastic food, because you read the ingredients, is that one thing natural in it, not one thing that's real. And if it is, it's the last ingredient.
And yeah. Food represents what you put into your mind. And so, therefore, if you are ingesting mental artificial food, you are going to ingest physical artificial food to enhance that. So they really have people going in a circle, and again, people don't recognize they're in a circle. They're afraid to get off. They don't know who they are. They don't have a sense of personal power. They have forgotten that, because the illusion that has been built up for them is something that they have bought into.
Yeah, and they've got a lot of investment into what they've bought into. It's like people's reality is a gargantuan Enron Ponzi scheme.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true.
Inflated totally out of control, absolutely worthless, but you put everything into it, and it's just going to leave you with nothing. Okay, and that's the point that people need to reach when they change their lives, is when they realize that when they're reduced to nothing. Okay, because it's after you've lost everything that you're free to do anything.
True, when people recognize that, and a lot of times when you're pushed down to being down and out, that's when it comes to the point where your creative juices start to flow. It's like, okay, I've reached the bottom. What can I do to get out of it? And so you start reaching into the recesses of your mind that you normally would not go into. So it serves a purpose if you allow it to serve a purpose. You know, if you are down and out, that's when you turn yourself around, because you have got to. You've got to feed yourself. You've got to clothe yourself. You know, you've got to figure out, how did I get here? And therefore, can I get out of it? You know, people are such powerful beings, and they don't stop and recognize it and claim that power. They buy into these illusions instead of going inside.
Well, there's no substitute really for what's inside, because it's how you determine everything that you look at, okay? And that's the problem people have, is that they've become detached from their own personal power over what happens in their own lives. And as a result, they think that every time that a president gets elected that you don't like, or every time a prime minister, whatever, okay, you think, man, there's no point voting anymore. So you stop voting, and now people are not voting in record numbers. And if all those people who didn't vote issued one vote of no confidence, boom, that's the end of this BS system of voting. Because it'd just be an absolute landslide. Because nobody really believes anymore that our politicians truly serve us. And it's interesting that we talk about how films represent all the things that are happening in reality. Last night, I saw an episode of a television show where some senator was leading a subcommittee on a giant petrochemical industry that was dumping chemicals into the water near children's parks and stuff like that. And he was being paid off to void the investigation. And I was like, my goodness, I wonder where they got that idea. It's because it happens all the time. It's almost as if everybody does know the truth, but they just haven't connected it. All right? Like they're being presented with one version of the truth, which is Hollywood glamorized, and they think that the real world is different. And that's the only difference between their perception of reality and ours, is that we know both sides of the truth coin.
No, that's true. And going back to what you said about the elections, I always say, you know, people in positions of power are not really elected. The election is just a show for the public, and they're not really elected. I always say that you have a better selection or a better reaction when you press the lever on your toilet bowl, because at least you know where that crap is going.
Well, and in a lot of cases, people don't know exactly where that crap is going. It could be washing out to sea near those houses in Malibu, for all they know.
Yes, or joining with the debris from Japan that's crossing the Pacific.
Oh, yes. And I saw the interesting picture of that with the house floating in the middle of the Pacific.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And I wonder if there's anyone in it.
Oh, yeah. I'll probably bet there is one guy sitting in there, and he has all the sushi you can eat, and he's just kicking it.
Well, I still wouldn't want to be in there.
Yeah, it's like, man, you know, and it's an old retired guy as well. And interestingly enough, he was debating with himself whether or not when he goes to America, whether he should take a plane or take a cruise. But, you know, it turns out that he got to take a cruise for free.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting thing to tell the grandkids. And that's the interesting thing we were talking about, heritage of the human race and all of this. But in present times, and speaking of the future, what is it really all about? I mean, we have at the moment a cacophony of crises. What do you think this particular period in time is all about, Stuart?
Well, this is really the activation of the end time programming, as I mentioned before. And I wrote about this in my Blue Blood book. And I said, this is the time when all of these events are going to occur. And basically what you're seeing is the fulfillment of the Book of Revelation, which was written by the Illuminati, written for them by the Pizzo family in Rome about 300 AD or so. And they basically following the script of making people believe that there's a second coming, and that this is the end times, and that there's a fight between good and evil, all these things occurring, and it says in there there'll be earthquakes and volcanic eruptions and plagues and all kinds of wars, and that's exactly what we're seeing. You pick up the newspaper and read it, you might as well read the Book of Revelation. It's the same script, the same stories. And so that's what's going on.
Do you believe that we've been repeating the same old story for many generations past?
Well, yes. You know, basically, I should say, if you look through history, it's the same kind of cycle over and over. The venues may have changed and the personalities may have changed a bit, but the same kind of events are occurring over and over again because nobody's learned the lesson. Nobody has released the mind patterns that create it, so it just keeps revolving and then cycling over and over.
But usually when it cycles, it also gets more intense, because if you don't get it the first time, it gets more intense, increasingly more intense, until it's finally so intense it's in your face and you cannot ignore it. You have to deal with it.
It's like a plug hole circling the drain, you know, going round and round and faster and faster.
That's exactly, you know, it is like a vortex. It spins around and around, and as you get deeper into it, it gets more intense, as Janet mentioned. And we're seeing the most intense time coming up in the near future. You know, the earthquakes that have happened across the Pacific, there'll be another several of them in the near future. We're going to see a volcanic eruption. which have already started in many places, the wars that we're seeing, the civil disorders, all of this is just the very beginning of the end time sequences that the Illuminati are perpetrating on the population.
I've got three takes on 2012. One, it's the return of the destroyer, the prophesized Planet X will come back and everything's going to get completely destroyed and humanity will be, for the most part, wiped out. Few people will survive and rebuild, and basically we start all over. Two, it's a New World Order psyop, a complete distraction, so that they can get everybody afraid and preparing for the end times, when meanwhile they can just scoop up all their assets out from under them and corrupt their governments even further and wind up taking complete control of them even easier. And the third one, which is the one I like to believe, was supposedly the Mayan prediction that the 2012 doomsday or whatever was not the the end of the world per se. It's a shift in consciousness, and humanity will open up and begin to endure a golden age of humanity never before experienced. And I like that.
But, yes, but unfortunately, the real answer is number two.
The psyop.
Yes.
Oh.
Because, you know, if you ask Mayan elders or Mayan priests about the predictions, they actually laugh and they say that's absolutely not what it says. It's simply
what is it saying?
It's basically, you know, the Mayan prophecies go in cycles also, and this is the fifth time. You know, the Earth has to them and their cycles ended already and started over again. That's why the Mayan calendar is a circle. It's not on a square. It's a circle where it ends, it begins, it goes round and round and round again. So it's not the end of anything, it's just the beginning of another cycle.
Whoa. So let me get this
straight.
I've got a great realization here. 2012 is for the Mayans what Y2K was for us. It's just the calendar switch.
Yes, exactly. It's, you know, and that's what I wanted to say. There's a Mayan elder out there who says, you know, according to what the governments or what the conspiracy people say, that December 21st, 2012, the world's coming to an end. He says, on December 22nd, 2012, I'll be waking up and making coffee and watching TV like I always did. You know, that's
not- Yeah. Well, I interviewed Tony Knight from the Healthy Salt Company. You know those big Himalayan salt mines that they got out there, right? And I asked him, you know, was he planning to go see his mine around December on 2012? You
know? Yeah. Well, it's interesting you mentioned about Himalayan salt, because I want to tell your audience it's very dangerous to use that stuff because it's filled with radon. All that salt that they get from deep in the mines, that's coming right from uranium. That's underneath it, and you're going to sprinkle, your radon-contaminated salt on yourself and your food and everything else.
Oh, for goodness sake. And they were telling us we should do it because it's got iodine in it, so our thyroids wouldn't absorb the radiation, but it's just radiation from a deeper source of radiation to combat the radiation that's going to come from the...
That's exactly correct. That's exactly... You know, most of the stuff out there is a big scam on the public.
Oh, I hate to learn the truth because it means that I was right all along.
Yes, listen to yourself.
Yeah. It's like you have to assume, right, that you're wrong, because otherwise if you assume that you're right, you could wind up being wrong. But if you assume that you're wrong, you're always right.
Well, I don't think I've had enough vodka to understand that one yet.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you were right all the time, it'd be very, very strange, wouldn't it? Because nobody's been able to do that. So you kind of have to see being wrong as an opportunity to learn something that you wouldn't be able to learn otherwise. And I find, and we were talking about the concept of personal corruption here, I believe that I'm corruptible. I used to be a salesman, so, you know, Lord knows. Lord knows there's bound to be some corrupt potential there. But the way I combat that is I see myself as the bad guy. Because if you see yourself as the good guy with impunity, you can justify doing any amount of evil things in the divine pursuit of truth and honor and justice and all of those good things. So you want to keep a check on yourself and think, if I was the bad guy, would I be doing what I'm doing now? You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we've got Stuart and Janet Swerdlow. We'll be right back.
Black sunrise, black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know the way it's going to go. It's gonna rain, rain, rain. Gotta take some cover when it's wild. Rain is falling down. It's gonna fall. Black sunrise, black sunrise. Shadow.
Welcome back.
Black sunrise.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Grooving down to the apocalypse on the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. My very special guests are Stuart and Janet Swerdlow. And on the break, I said, hey, have you got any words of wisdom for the audience? And they said, well, isn't that what we've been doing the whole time? And I thought, yes, yes it is. I forgot. Maybe I've got Alzheimer's. And it seems like a real possibility. I think I did crack one of those energy-saver light bulbs in my kitchen not too long ago. And it says when you do that, you're supposed to get outside of the room and area immediately and then approach it about an hour and a half later with gloves and a breathing apparatus and a glass jar with a screw-on lid. And gently and gingerly pour the remnants into that glass jar and then take it to a specified recycling facility where you have to pay to dump it. Yeah, that's basically the root cause of how dangerous our society is, because that's not an isolated incident where things that are incredibly dangerous, disgusting, and certainly not necessary are specifically placed as consumer items so that people will consume their own demise. It's a brilliant scam because everybody has nobody to blame but themselves because they consented to it. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, and you don't really have much of a choice because what's the alternative? You think living life in bondage and fear is something worthy of merit? Of course not. You have to live life in love and heartfelt notions and creativity and such, which is why it's so nice to have people like Stuart and Janet on my show. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you. Good to still be here.
And it's been my esteemed pleasure because I've got an idea in my head, right, that I'm trying to learn as much as I can about the world, and I don't have time to learn everything to great detail, but I can talk to the top minds in the world on my radio show, right? So I'm trying to absorb all the information from the experts, from the people who are talented, brilliant people, so that I can share in their knowledge, and so can all the listeners. And your personal background with things that the public would be absolutely shocked to learn, what is it that makes you different from the general slave masses? So I mean, the both of you, what is it at the central core that makes you different? Or is it just a scale of influences endlessly piled on top of each other to produce a result?
Well, that's a very interesting question. And I think it's there's a lot of layers of answers to that one. If anyone has read my autobiography, you know that my birth was very strange. When my mother went into labor with me, They told her that it was impossible for her to have become pregnant because she had no birth canal, and they had to perform surgery on her in order to let me out. So later on, I found out that I was actually implanted in her womb as part of a genetic experiment. So that's one factor, perhaps, of
Well, there's not too many people that would share in that, was there? All right, actually, come to think of it, I wouldn't be surprised if there was.
Well, you know, I was in the it's in the medical books. My mother, you know, was written up because they had never seen anything like it before, especially in those days. And then, of course, my father's history, my father's family, my great uncle being the first president of the Soviet Union, and my grandfather being sent to the United States and Britain to start the Communist Party, and my grandmother being a Soviet spy. All of these things were factors in my upbringing and in my knowledge of what's going on in the world.
Well, it seems that it's like connection, right? Something has to connect you to the conspiracy realm in order for you to be aware of and participate in it, you know? And with some people, these new, what I call armchair truthers who are watching a couple of films online and then thinking they know everything about the truth movements and about awareness and about patriotism and all of that kind of stuff. And it's kind of like if you know your past, you'll be able to predict what's going to happen next because, as Mark Twain put it, history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. And if we take lessons from our past, you know, I mean, my father, for example, he designed over 400 different types of forklift tires. And by the time I was 5 years old, he had a 97% market share in the entire Southern Hemisphere for all these different types of tires that he designed. He revolutionized the whole industry. And I understand more now after he died last year that we sort of inherent the past when we're born, and we only wait for it to be activated.
You know, for myself, I was thinking about this actually some time ago because I have a monthly newsletter called Magnify Your Mind, and I pick a theme every month that I write on. And last month I wrote on leadership and how people should be a leader of themselves. And I think that for me, that's been one of the things that I was born with, is that I do lead myself wherever I need to go. I do feel, and I know, I mean, everybody is inherently connected to their source. I know I'm connected. And that's what I offer people when that they study with me or take my classes or read my books, is I am continually reminding and giving back to them what they already have, which is their own personal power, and that they should be their own leader. And if I say where there was no path, I forged a path. If somebody said no to me, I turned it around into a yes. If somebody gives me a block, I make it a stepping stone to move forward. Nobody stops me when I know that I'm supposed to be in a certain place and I have that connection and I am being told by my own inner sources, this is where I'm supposed to be, how I'm supposed to be, and I get myself there one way or the other. There is no such word as no unless it comes from higher authority. And I think if people would stop and recognize that they need to lead themselves wherever it is that they need to go and get rid of all this extraneous garbage that they accept and the distractions that are purposefully implanted out there to side rail them and keep moving forward deeper into themselves, that there is nothing that they cannot accomplish. And I think, as you talked a little bit earlier about the work ethic, that's gone. You know, people have forgotten who they are. And that has always been awake within me. I know who I am. People may not like that, and people may not like me. I don't really care. I know what I'm supposed to do, and I get out there and I accomplish it. And if you have a problem, that becomes your problem, not my problem.
It's a problem of language barriers, I think, because you need to be talking with someone in a language that's capable of defining who they are. If you don't understand who you are, how exactly could you describe yourself to another person?
That's true. It's like I tell people, if you've never had an orange before, I can only tell you so much. Therefore, you have to taste that orange, and then we can agree to talk about the orange. And when I teach people, I teach them experientially. And people can come to my seminars, and within a couple of hours, they know they're connected to their oversoul. They know how to do archetypes. They know how to that their intuition is active. They get information. They just need guidance. You know, a long time ago, there used to be apprentices. If you wanted to learn to shoe horses, you went to the horseshoe maker, and you learned how to make a horseshoe. You didn't read about it in a book, and you didn't go study about it in university for 4 years from somebody who else read it in a book. And so people need that one-on-one, and that's very challenging to find, because it's whenever people get a hold of the truth, the Illuminati is already two steps ahead of them, leading them into another direction. You know, it's like the aura. People so focus on what does the aura look like, they forget that there's stuff outside the aura. And so I teach people, hey, let's go outside the aura. That's a whole new thing for them. But people started thinking about that, and then the New Age came in, and they got them all involved in what is an aura. Well, hey, that's just part of the puzzle. You've got to go a lot further than that if you want to get to where you think you're going. So there's always a trap. There's always an illusion to drag you in. And it's very important that you get inside of yourself and you say, I want to know, I want the answer, and I'm going to find it. I have that right, and nobody can take that right away from me.
Yeah, I think my generation's problem is that we read between the lines so much that we forget the lines themselves. We don't even react when they're crossed anymore. You know, we've forgotten that competition is kind of redundant, you know, because you accomplish so much more with cooperation and collaboration than you ever would by competing with one another. And everybody has got this kind of belief structure and like third-party info, like somebody told somebody who told me such and such is true, so therefore it must be a fact, you know. And they just don't really know. But I think it's on the points. I think it's on the points that we agree that we should come together and collaborate and cooperate. And on the points that we disagree, we can just leave those arguments for another time, because it's just going to stop us from getting anywhere right now.
Well, you know, people are. I watched a movie with one of my sons on Gandhi. You know, and Gandhi, in the beginning, when the British took over, he helped unite the people. But in the end, once that they had booted the British out, all the different factions fought within themselves, and they're the ones who killed him in the long run. So I tell people, as wonderful as that sounds, that let's all cooperate on what we agree on, what is it we agree on? I mean, that's, again, another layer. People can't agree within themselves, and so they outpicture that disagreement in the outer world. And so it is a little bit more complicated. But if we take it full circle, it is so simple that it becomes complicated. You know, it's a challenge, because we have to be able to communicate what it is we know, and very few people can do that.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's like that's sort of the problem with government, is that if you want people to agree on something, they go down to these base fundamental principles that don't have a very wide range of discourse. So if you know what I mean, it's like they're picking ideas from a very small ideas basket.
And yeah, I certainly understand what you're saying on that one. It's interesting.
If you don't have creative people in government, how are you ever going to create a solution? And the answer to that is, government isn't supposed to create solutions. It's supposed to create problems, because problems create jobs for politicians. And you've got to grow more jobs to grow the economy.
Absolutely. You know, there's a reason why things are set up, and they're not really to help enhance the individual. You know, it really is for mind control. Everything that's out there right now, the institutions that exist, unfortunately, even though they have the appearance of helping people, unfortunately, they lead them to dependence on outer sources.
Well, and if you want true happiness or true strength, it always lies within. Because, I don't know, I see myself as sort of a generator, you know. I can generate happiness, I can generate words, I can generate thoughts, I can make all these things up. Okay, there's nothing else in the world that can do that like I can, and nor anybody for that matter. And to see yourself as an infinite ideas and action generator is quite empowering, Because, you know, you don't need to plug in somewhere like some crappy little hybrid car whose electric motor is going to give you cancer.
Well, let's wish that, let's hope more people have that attitude. That's a great attitude.
Well, you know, every day is another day to fight the New World Order or to have a laugh at the New World Order's expense.
Because nobody's
got a bigger expense account than the New World Order. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guests are Janet and Stuart Swerdlow of Expansions.com. Join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And we'll be right back after this very short break.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. And just like I say on the movie 2012, I wish we'd had more time with my very special guests, Janet and Stuart Swerdlow. Now, guys, I wanted to ask you, let's sort of make a compound answer, and I'd love both of you to try and answer it for you. I'm going to throw some words at you. Japan, Libya, UFOs, staged alien invasion, and staged second coming. What does this mean for our future?
Well, that's part of the scenario I spoke about earlier. For the Book of Revelations coming to life. And what we're seeing happening in Japan, which I actually wrote about and spoke about in about 2002, 2003, where the Illuminati 13 families are actually trying to destroy the Japanese royal family, which is a 14th family, which they consider to be inferior and in need of destruction. And so that's why you're seeing these things happening to Japan, and that will continue to happen until Japan mostly is sunk into the ocean. We're also seeing these stories about UFOs or objects out in space, and it's even getting onto conventional news. In fact, just the other day, they had these pages released from JFK where he, 10 days before his assassination, he requested information on aliens and UFOs to be released to him and to the public, and then he was assassinated. And so all of these things are leading up to an imprinting of the public to make them realize that aliens do exist, that there is life out there in space. They tell us that now almost on a daily basis. Even the Vatican has said that the aliens exist and they are our brothers in Christ and we should accept them. You know, so that was a big red flag to me when I heard that one. And that's what's going to happen. We're going to have a staged attack on the Earth by these alien groups that we will not actually see. We'll just have the Blue Beam Project projecting UFOs and explosions all over the place. And then we will have a savior race come and eliminate that attacking race. And the savior race will say that they actually were the ones who created humanity, and it's mommy and daddy coming back to save us. And they will be, of course, reptilian. And we'll prove that by showing that we have reptilian DNA in us. And then comes the second coming of Christ, where he proclaims a new world order, his new holy empire, and it all gets wrapped up in a neat little package, and everyone has to accept a new world religion and a world government ordained by Christ himself and all the alien connections that go along with it. And there's the story right there.
Boom. Just like that.
And that's the thing. It happened.
We are seeing it happen, and we're seeing it happen both in reality and also on the big screen. And it seems almost that these big screen movies now are more like Marines recruitment videos than a feature film. there's something gearing up for just major, major conflict everywhere. And it reminds me of Jonathan Gray, who talked about Noah's Ark, and at the time of it, there was three world wars going on or something like that, and it was a time of great deception and corruption and all of that kind of stuff when all this water came on down upon everybody. And incidentally, they had an industrial revolution 200 years before this great time of peril. And we had an industrial revolution about 200 years ago. Isn't that interesting? There's a very strange sort of coincidence that goes on. And I'm not sure if it's coincidence that goes on throughout history, but even if everything is going to hell in a handbasket, even if that was the truth, it wouldn't matter because it would just be repeating again another lesson. We have another chance to get it done.
Yes, that's all very true, and, truth is stranger than fiction sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, where do you think the Hollywood people get their ideas from, you know? It's just like there's not that many creative people in the entertainment industry, I can assure you.
No, and I did work in Hollywood for a period of time, and there was producers who told me point blank that they're told what to create and how to present it by representatives from the government. And they said that to me point blank.
Well, that sounds about right, because if it wasn't a conspiracy, good things would happen occasionally. But they never do!
Not that we learn about, anyway.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that's the thing that the media really plays a vital part in, is telling people the real truth, not the white lie. Because a white lie will turn into a very ugly truth in the darkness. Thanks very much, Janet and Stuart, for coming on the show with me today. I'd love it if you could fire out your websites and say a final word of wisdom for the listeners.
Well, thank you so much for having us on. It was a real pleasure. I would like to invite your listeners to visit our website, expansions.com, and sign up for our free daily newsletter that we have on the homepage. We do have our upcoming seminar, Inner Health, Outer Wealth, which it's just a week away. It's an amazing opportunity to learn what to do to create health, wealth, relationship wealth, financial wealth, everything that you could possibly need in these changing times. And the information that we give you, you will not find anywhere else on this planet, because we do go into the past and we do talk about how it affects you in your future, and you do find out who and what you are and the personal power that you have within you. Thank you so much for having us. We really do appreciate the invitation.
Yes, it was really always a pleasure to speak with you, Vincent.
Oh, man, it gives me lots of warm fuzzies. Love you so much, guys. And thank you so much for doing all the work that you do to try and advance humanity in some direction. And it's truly in a time of fallen heroes and darkness and all those bad, terrible things swirling the drain like a dark vortex that you need to look at the lights among you and draw your glow from them. Thanks so much for coming on the show, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll catch you again sometime.